I'm going to tell you a little story. What I want to do is I want to take you back to 1727. Now, in 1727, a young man was born on the lower Delmarva Peninsula. Actually, he was born in Maryland. And he grew up as a farmer. And in 1752, he got married. So between 1752 and 1767, they had five children. And they bought a little farm, about 50 acres, and they just farmed. So that's the basis of a family. Now, when you stop and think, it's not like today. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have telephones. They didn't have running water. You know, they didn't have inside plumbing. They didn't have anything. But they knew how to work, and they knew how to survive. Now, our farmer, he didn't like British very much. He didn't like them at all, to be honest with you. He didn't like them because his father came from Ireland. And his father had been driven out of Ireland by the British. In fact, originally, the family came from Scotland. And after the Scottish-English Wars, the Scots were pushed out and pushed into Ireland. And so they migrated to Ireland. And after a couple of hundred years, they migrated to the United States. The reason they did that was the British didn't like the British. The British treated them as not British subjects. So you have to stop and think that all the Scotch-Irish throughout the South, in fact, in the United States, really did not like the British at all. And there were a lot of Scotch-Irish that came in. So we're going to call our young patriot, John. So he starts with the basis of, I don't like the British. Now, in 1764, the British passed the Sugar Act. And that didn't affect John too much because they didn't have sugar. They didn't have, you know, sugar in their coffee. They didn't make crumb cakes and all the good stuff that we have today. So it really didn't. But then, the next year, in 1765, the British passed the Stamp Act. Now, the Stamp Act did affect everybody. Why? Because any paper that had to do with a legal paper had to have a stamp. And you had to pay for that stamp. So all your deeds, your wills, anything to do with government, you had to have a stamp. Well, that didn't set too well with the colonists, especially John. So the colonists went into an uproar, and they finally took that away. Then in 1767... they started taxing lead, glass, paint, paper, and tea. Now, everybody did drink tea. Okay? Now, colonists started demonstrating again. Now, being a farmer, where'd you get your news? You didn't go in and turn your TV on and you got CNN 24/7. No, you didn't have a radio. You didn't have anything. How'd you get your news? Gossip. You went to church. Talk to your neighbors. A lot of things were going on in the colonies, and all of it was being passed by word of mouth. Oh, there was a few newspapers here and there, but really, when you stop and think about it, how many of the farmers were literate? How many could read? They couldn't. They wouldn't even have schools, except maybe a few. So that's how they got their news. So in 1770, they heard about the Boston Massacre. And they thought, why would the regulars, and that's what they call the British, why would they start shooting unarmed civilians? Then everything got real quiet for about 3 years. See, the British never repealed the tax on tea. In fact, they increased the tax. And there were some people up in the northern part of the United States that didn't like that too much. So what happened? They had the Boston Tea Party. And everybody hears about the Boston Tea Party. But did you know they also did it in New York and New Jersey and Maryland? They did the same thing.
Savannah.
So they did it all over. And now you can see, they could start to see the way the British started treating them. They were not British subjects. They were the colonists. They were there to work for Great Britain. So they're not treated very well. 1774, colonies started something called the First Continental Congress. It was a real secret. Nobody knew that it was actually went on until it was all over. And that happened in Philadelphia. Now, you could really feel something going on. And John could feel something going on. John doesn't know what's happening, except for what he's told. Then in April of 1775, while they're out planting, putting in their crops for the year, what do they hear? They hear about Lexington Concord. Now John knows war's here. War's coming. He doesn't see a way around it. So, in January 1776, before the Declaration of Independence, John walks 50 miles to what is then the lower counties of Delaware, which is what they called them because they were still the three lower counties of Pennsylvania, to their capital, which is Dover. And in 1775, Delaware had called its own Congress, elected its own government, and basically told Pennsylvania, we'll see y'all later. And they became Delaware. And the first thing they did was authorize a standing army, Continental Army. And so John walks up, and he puts his mark down, and in January of 1775, he becomes a soldier in the 1st Delaware Line. So from January to April, John does all his marching, he does all his soldiering, and there was a doctor from Dover who put up the money and bought all of them uniforms. And the uniforms were a black tri-corner hat, trimmed in yellow, two cotton shirts, a white canvas waistcoat, and their overcoat was dark blue with red facings and red turnbacks. The turnbacks are what's down here. Okay? They have white canvas pants, two pairs of socks, a pair of shoes with buckles that had a DR, which is Delaware Regiment, insignia on it. The buttons on their coat had DR on it. And they had black splatter dashers. And a splatter dasher goes from your ankle up to about your knee. And that was to keep you from, when you're walking through the woods, keep the briars from ripping your legs apart and your socks apart. So that's what a splatter dasher was. They were the best outfitted Continental Line in the United States, in the country. And by the way, most of the other 13 colonies began to adopt those same uniforms, and it became a standard. So when you see the guys today, they're walking around with the blue and the red. That all came from Delaware. So, in April, the company commander splits out some guys and sends them to Lewis. There's a British ship that's sailing in and out of the Delaware Bay, harassing. And Delaware Bay comes up and it becomes the Delaware River. And it goes up past Philadelphia, Wilmington, Delaware. Actually, it goes all the way up into New Jersey. It splits New Jersey. So I'm going to give you a little geography lesson while I'm at it. Well, it was a good thing they did because the cannon they had, they took down there with them, they drove off the Roebuck, which was the British ship. Now, in May, they sent another group up to Port Penn. Port Penn is where the Delaware River narrows, and you can actually see the New Jersey shore. And the Roebuck was coming north, up towards Philadelphia. Well, it got to Port Penn, and it met the cannons again. And they turned around and went back. So in August, or June rather, they started marching and started pulling the company back, or the regiment back together. John, on July the 4th, 1776, they heard about the Declaration of Independence. And they knew what that meant. That was all out war. So what they do? They marched to Wilmington, or Newcastle. And they broke into the government office. And they took every piece of paper they could find that had a government stamp on it, and they burned it. John later said that was the most fun he had in the whole war. Well, now they pull the whole regiment together. And it's got 800 men. The problem was, they only had 240 guns. So the officer said, if they were attacked, when a man goes down, get his gun and ammo, and you start firing. Well, that doesn't help things too much. But they pulled everybody together, and they marched into Philadelphia at the very beginning of August. And a ship arrived from France. And on that ship were French muskets. And so the Delaware Regiment got totally outfitted with French muskets. They also got cartridge boxes and everything else. So now they were complete. Now, during this time, from a military standpoint, there were about four or five districts, military districts. In fact, when you're doing some genealogical research and you look up a census, look up at the very top, and you'll see where it says military district. Okay? So everything was a military district. Well, George Washington from Virginia was the general for the Middle Atlantic District, which was Virginia, Delaware, Maryland. And so John is going to serve under General Washington, the whole 1st Delaware Regiment, the 1st Maryland Regiment, the 1st Virginia. They were all under Washington. Of course, we know that Washington becomes the supreme commander. Well, they leave Philadelphia, and they march up into New Jersey. And I just want you to kind of track, because this is not short distance. From Dover to Philadelphia, it's about 65 miles. From Philadelphia to North Jersey, you're probably looking at about 100 miles. In September, they were in Amboy, New Jersey, which is right across the river from New York. Well, they crossed the river to New York, and they went to Long Island. And there they waited. Now, the British had 32,000 troops coming out. And they actually came in, and they landed on Long Island, and they started to come in. Now, the Americans had never been in battle before, except for the French and Indian Wars. But most of the men were farmers. They had never been in battle. Nobody knew how they were going to react. So on August 27th, the Battle of Long Island starts. John is on the far right side of the Continental Line. So on the very far right was the 1st Maryland, then the 1st Delaware, and they moved on towards the center. And John was up against the rocky outcrop, and they held. The 1st Delaware held the onslaught of the British. The British came up and started to come to the right to do a flanking maneuver, and they basically chewed up the 1st Maryland. And the 1st Maryland were running through swamps, trying to get away. The 1st Delaware held their own. And then they were told to retreat, and they started to retreat. And they basically held the British off that flanking maneuver and allowed the rest of the army to go back into Harlem Heights. Now, September the 16th, they were in Harlem Heights, and they were on high ground. And there was about 1,800 Continentals, and 5,000 British came out of it. And John was there at Harlem Heights, and they started retreating. But the British made a mistake. They had their buglers start playing a tune, which basically said, "Run, little fox," which was a popular tune in those days. Well, the Americans didn't quite like that too much. So what they did was they did a counterattack, and they drove the British completely off the field. They were going to drive them right back into Manhattan. They were not going to stop. But the commanders there stopped them from chasing them too far. On October the 22nd, they went to Maroneck. And they were led a night attack. And they were against the British Queen's Rangers. But they captured 36 Queen's Rangers, and they had 60 of men, muskets, their blankets, and it was quite a night. And their commanding officer was pretty proud. Then they marched on to White Plains, New York. Now it's towards the end of October, 1776. It's getting cold. On October the 28th, the British attacked them at White Plains. And they had, of course, they had to retreat. And they were on a hill called Chatterton's Hill. And John had to retreat off the hill. But they put up a good fight. And they, once again, blocked the British and allowed the rest of the army to escape. They marched north some more, and they crossed over into the Delaware, or into New Jersey. The British came after them. The British wanted to end the war right there. It's cold. And one morning early, while they were all asleep, the British attacked. And the army had to leave. They left their tents, their food. A lot of them didn't have pants, left their pants. And they ran. But they got formed up again. They had their muskets. But they marched. They marched down into Pennsylvania. By now it's really cold. There are men there with no shoes, no socks. A lot of men with no pants. And back then they didn't have underwear. So you can imagine, they had nothing, their coats. That's what kept them warm. John has no shoes. John is a little cold. Well, they finally make a camp. And the only way that John survived was to keep his feet up against the fire. Then December the 28th comes, and their commanders say, "Everybody up, we're leaving. Pack them up." What happened? The men that haven't died, that weren't sick. They have an army of 2,500. They're down from about 20,000. They're down to 2,500. John marches to the edge of the Delaware River, and he crosses the Delaware River. Now, there's two stories to this. One story says that there were five men from the Delaware Regiment left that could fight that. It was John, a lieutenant, a doctor, and a sergeant, and one other guy. Another story says there were 100 that were left, out of 800 men that started out. So you can see how depleted the Delaware ranks were. Well, John is one of the men that crossed the Delaware River that night. And he fought at the Battle of Trenton. And they defeated the Prussians in Trenton. John said, "At least we got warm." They took the Prussians' shoes. They took their pants. Had to. They didn't have anything. And they thought, "Well, we can stay here, be warm, and we got food." And he said, "No." He packed everybody up. And they headed north. They went to Princeton. And they got attacked by the British in Princeton. But this time, the Continental Army not only held, they pushed the British back. And they won the Battle of Princeton. Some of the generals wanted to press on. But you only had less than 2,500 men now. So they said, "No, let's cross the Delaware." So they crossed the Delaware again, back into Pennsylvania. And they took all the boats. So the British couldn't come after them. And they spent the winter there. Now that was the winter that was full of snow. That was the winter that was really, really cold. It wasn't until February that they finally got some new clothes. Now, their regiment was reorganized, and they were actually put in with the 1st Maryland. Then they were put with the 1st Virginia. Then they were split up, and they became the Delaware Regiment again. And they started getting reinforcements. But they never got back to 800 men. But John has been in all these battles. So what they do is they march back into Pennsylvania, and they basically spend the summer kind of hanging out. Then on October the 4th, or September the 11th, they were fought in the Battle of the Brandywine River, which is in Pennsylvania. And John was assigned to defend the ford there. And the battle went on all day. And John and the Delaware were holding the British back. And once again, the British outflanked the Americans. And once again, the Delaware Regiment held the British while the rest of the army escapes. Then October the 4th, he fought in the Battle of Germantown. And that's where their commanding officer got killed. And John's a private. Staying a private. Now they move from camp to camp for the next couple of months. And the British came in and took Philadelphia. Congress moved to Easton, Pennsylvania. Is that Easton?
York.
York, Pennsylvania. Moved to York. Then they went into Valley Forge. Once again, they didn't have, a lot of men didn't have shoes. Only this time it was worse. This time there was no snow. Valley Forge had no snow. They had ice. So what they did was they set the men to chopping down the trees and building these log huts. And that's where they spent the winter. More men died from disease and froze to death than anything else. John survived. He survived out in Valley Forge. In fact, when they finally brought two congressmen in to look at the troops and to show Congress how bad and dire the straits were for the American Army, they went back and finally got the states to fund. Because Congress at that time didn't have the authority to fund anything. The states had to do it. So they could get the states to do it. So the states finally put up money, and they got them uniforms, they got them food. And they survived Valley Forge. Towards the spring, more men started coming back. The army started growing. It was so bad in Valley Forge. It wasn't just the men that died. They lost 700 horses to starvation. I just want to give you an idea of what John's up against. And the fortitude that our forefathers had. The strength of character to survive through this. And they did. Now, by the end of February, they started getting supplies. Then one day, this cocky Prussian comes into camp and says he's a trainer of the Prussian army. And his name was Baron von Stuben. Well, the way he did it, he trained. Washington says, here, train my army. So he sits down, he writes a field manual. And then he gathers a group and he trains the officers. And then the officers went out and they got a company, and they trained each company, and they keep going until the whole army is trained. And that's how von Steuben trained the whole American army in the period of about 3 months. Was he didn't do it all, but he trained the core group, and then once the core group had it down, then the core group started training, and they just got it done. On May the 6th, the French signed an alliance. And they were going to supply the American army with guns, cannon, and money. It's the first one. And they had a real big party at Valley Forge. I mean, they shot off the cannon, they shot off their guns, they marched, they paraded in front of all the French generals, in front of the American generals. And they had a great day. And then on June 27th, they met the British Army at Monmouth, New Jersey. It was over 100 degrees that day. I don't know if you can imagine it, but George can, the guys in the color guard can, when it gets to 100 degrees and you're wearing your uniform, I'll tell you what, you get drained away. More men died of heat exhaustion that day than were actually killed in that battle. And that was on both sides. But that was the largest battle they'd been in. And they held their own. The British did not drive them from the field. They held them dead. Now the British know they're in trouble. Because until this point, every time they got in a battle, the Americans withdrew. They left. They retreated. Got off the field. All of a sudden, the Americans are standing toe-to-toe and going toe-to-toe with them. And the British aren't used to that. Now, on July the 16th, John volunteers to go on a night raid. And he's put under the command of General Mad Anthony Wayne. And what they do is they go up to Stony Point, New York. The British don't, I mean, the British are all have New York. Okay? Stony Point's not that far from New York City. And they do a night raid. The British didn't even know what was happening. They killed 63, they wounded 70, and they captured 534. British soldiers. There were 1,350 Americans in that raid. But they captured 15 cannons, and they took all their supplies and all their food, and they went back to the American Army. they got out of there quick before the rest of the British troops could figure out what had happened. Now, John spends the rest of the summer and into the fall up in Morristown, New Jersey. He's got kind of life kind of easy. You know, he's not marching around, he's just in camp. He thinks, okay, we're going to winter here. So they start the winter there. And John's got, you know, got fire, he's got clothes, he's got food, he's, you know, he's very happy. Up until about, I'd say January. And in January, they get news that the whole regiment has been transferred to the Southern armies. And so they're to pack up and start marching south. So the 1st Delaware Regiment, the 1st Maryland Regiment, pack up, and they head south. And they become part of the Southern Army. Now John's walking from just outside of New York City all the way down into North Carolina. He's walking. Or he's marching. Just to give you an idea, how long would it take you to drive from North Carolina to New York? How many miles would it be? They walk it. Now it's 1780. And on August the 16th, they met the British at Camden, South Carolina. And it was a real bad day. The regiment only had 275 men. 70 of them were killed. 70 were wounded. And 10 of their officers and 60 of their men were captured. John got away. And he stood and let the rest of the army get away. And a few days later, the men that were captured were rescued by, guess who? Francis Marion.
Oh.
Swamp Fox. Did you ever see the movie The Patriot? Mm-hmm. Remember when he had those British up on the hill and he had them tied up to stakes?
Yeah.
Yep. Francis Marion went into the fort and got all 70 men. He got them out of there. The film took a little artistic privilege. But basically, what Francis Marion did was to rescue the men from the 1st Delaware Regiment. Now, they got split into three groups, what was left of the Delaware Regiment. John was put under the command of Robert Kirkwood. Second group went with the 1st Maryland. The severely wounded and the invalid, along with a few officers, went back to Delaware to recruit. Now, John spends the rest of 1780 shadowing the redcoats and through North and South Carolina. But now, he's under the command of General Nathaniel Greene. So on January 17th, 1781, John is at the Battle of Cowpens. He's there with Greene. We all know what happens at Cowpens. Just think of that last battle, see, in The Patriot. That's basically kind of the way that battle went. Is they sent the militia out. The militia fires a couple of rounds at the British regulars, turns around, comes back, only they funnel them into an area. And the Delaware Continental on one side, the Maryland Continental line was on the other, and the cavalry was in the woods. And when the British regulars came in and Tarleton's group came into that funnel, they all just opened up. And then the cavalry went in, and Tarleton and a couple of other guys were the only ones to get out of that battle. The rest of his army was taken. So he leaves there, and he goes south again. And then in April the 25th, 1781, he has a battle at Hopkirk's Hill in South Carolina. General Greene made him pull back. But the British pulled back to Camden, and then they moved on to Fort 96. And John's at the Siege of 96. And the Continental Army had 1,000 men, and they were up against 550 Loyalists. But then the British troops sent reinforcements out of Charleston, and so Greene pulls everybody out. Now, he stays in South Carolina for the rest of that summer. And on September the 28th, he's at the Battle of Eutaw Springs. A lot of people say, that's just another battle. It wasn't.
Eutaw Springs was actually the real turning point in the Southern campaign. The American Army did not move. The British Army did not move. It was hand-to-hand combat. Eyewitnesses say that there were men who were leaned over with a bayonet at them and the gun holding them up. But that was the one that really started turning the tide in the Americans' favor, because the Americans did not back down. The British actually backed down on that one. Now they go on. The John Quakes at, it was at Cowpens, 96, Eutaw Springs, and one other big battle he was in. But his last battle was October the 28th, 1781. The interesting part about this is, if you haven't thought about it, John's born 1727. He joins the army January 1776. He's 49 years old. When he joins the army, John stays in the army until 1783, when he's in his 50s. And he's been marching in his 50s since 1776. See how many of us can do that.
And you complain about driving around Georgia.
I do. I do.
In air conditioning.
In air conditioning.
No stereo.
Right. In short sleeve shirts. In shorts.
And good shoes.
And good shoes.
With underwear. We are assuming. That's an assumption now. That's assumption. Just an assumption.
Yeah, there's some question as to whether John was at Yorktown. We know that part of the 1st Delaware Regiment was sent to Yorktown, and that they defended one of the batteries, one of the artillery batteries at Yorktown. We assume that John was one of the ones that went to Yorktown. And if he did, he watched the British come out of Yorktown and lay down their arms. Now, John starts marching back to Delaware. In March of 1784, he received his final pay. But he's in northern Delaware, at the very top of Delaware. He hadn't been paid in 3 years. He got the grand total of $6.60 a month as a private. And they gave him part of his pay in November of 1783 and the balance in March of 1784. So then he has to go home. So he walks the 100 or so miles home. He has served from January of 1776 through November the 3rd, 1783. 7 years, 10 months. He had marched thousands of miles. He fought in every major battle in every year of the war. He didn't think it would last as long as it did, but he was very happy that they had thrown the British out. He had 5 children, 4 boys and 1 girl. And the boys had stayed home and kept up the farming and taking care of his wife. So he went back to farming, and he and his wife grew old together. They watched the United States become a nation. Said he voted for George Washington twice, John Adams, and Sam Adams once. His wife died in 1797. She was 69. John died January the 20th, 1800. He was 73 years old. He had been a British subject, colonist, farmer, a husband, a father, a patriot, a soldier, a grandfather, died an American.